Salem, I'm really having a good time doing this workshop. Next week is going to be the last opportunity I have to be up here. Ronnie has volunteered to finish up the book for us, the final four chapters. Right, Ronnie? Ronnie's going, what? But I'm hoping to get us at least halfway through the chapter Working with Others next week. A very, very important chapter. It's a chapter probably that a lot of people, a lot of AA members really, really don't apply in their work with other alcoholics. And I think if we did, we'd have a higher quality of Alcoholics Anonymous member. We may not have as many people in the meetings, but we'd have a lot more people that were really really in recovery. So anyway, we'll talk about that a little next week. Where we are this week is we're finishing up step nine. We're talking about the step nine promises. Now I'd like to just go back to page 52 a little bit here. I'm going to read the bedevilments on page 52. We were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Okay, those are the bedevilments. Now, think about those bedevilments when we go through the ninth step promises. And remember, we hear these promises at so many AA meetings, but they're taken out of context. When I first heard these promises, I thought they were the AA promises, and if I went to enough meetings, I would get these promises. And that's really not what happened. I went to a lot of meetings, and I was restless, irritable, and discontented, whether I was going to meetings or not. These particular promises materialize if we work for them. If we are painstaking about this point, phase of our development, what does that mean? If we're painstaking about making amends, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. Halfway through what? Halfway through our amends list. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. These are the antidote to the bedevilments. Going from page 52 to page 84, we get a whole transformation in how we behave, how we think, and how we feel. It's a whole change in our attitude and outlook. And these promises materialize if we work for them. These promises are really moving us into the spiritual awakening. Think about a spiritual awakening for a minute. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps, what would be a spiritual awakening? Wouldn't that be the awakening of your spirit? Well, wouldn't that mean that you've had a spirit that's been asleep? If your spirit is going to awaken with these steps, wouldn't that mean that you've had a spirit that's been asleep? I believe it would. I believe that so often we are asleep to our real nature, to our real understanding of our place in the universe, and our position as children of God. I think we're asleep to that, and we're walking around acting like we're awake. And this spiritual awakening is just that. We become awake to the things that we need to understand about ourselves. And we shift our perceptions and our perspectives toward much more healthy attitudes and outlooks. That really is what the spiritual awakening is. And it only happens, the spiritual awakening, as the result of the 12 steps. That spiritual awakening only happens when you actually take these steps. You can't have a spiritual awakening as the result of steps you've never taken. So, halfway through the ninth step, into the real heart of the ninth step, we're starting to change. You know, if you look at some of these promises, they're unbelievable. Self-seeking will slip away. Well, we understood that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of all of our problems. So self-seeking will slip away. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We saw when we were doing our fourth step that we had so much fear that it was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It caused chains of circumstances that placed us in positions where we felt like the whole world was doing us wrong. And really, it was our own fault. The problems were not coming at us. They were coming from us. And we start to see that. Self-pity will disappear. A sense of uselessness will disappear. We will know peace. We will understand the word serenity. These are all things that were outside of our grasp when we were being driven by bondage to self. We were being driven by our character defects. We were running around the planet just shooting ourselves in the foot every chance we got. And now, you know, we find that even that experience of running around the planet shooting ourselves in the foot all the time, we can even see that experience will be able to benefit others. So the worst things that happen to us in our lives, the absolute low points of our whole lives, we can actually use that experience to be able to relate to a newcomer. To be able to relate to another alcoholic, and we'll be able to say, I know how you feel. I've been there. You don't have to live like this anymore. There's a way out upon which we can all agree, and we can all join in brotherly and harmonious action, you know, the 12-step process. And we can recover from this illness, alcoholism, and we can have a really, really great life. And we'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. That is an amazing promise. I don't know about anybody else in here, but my vision of what God was doing to me when I was drinking, I thought all my problems were because God was really pissed off at me. You know, today I know that the power that helps completely transform my life and gives me the power to move away from my character defects, that gives me the power to stay separated from alcohol, that power is the power of God. And I feel it working in my life. I'm aware of the consciousness of the presence of God is something that goes with me everywhere I go. And that's an amazing promise. That means you're never going to be alone again. The alcoholic is a person who can feel alone in the middle of a club. You know, in the middle of a dance club, we can feel alone. And that the consciousness of the presence of God is going to go with us, and we're not going to be alone anymore. We're going to be able to move forward. We're going to be able to step out and do our job. You know, whether it be out as an Alcoholics Anonymous member, as a family member, as an employee, as an employer, as a citizen of the community, we're going to be able to step out and we're going to be able to do our job because we're not crippled with fear and we're not in bondage to self. And this is amazing. The recovery process is truly amazing. The craziest thing in Alcoholics Anonymous is the amount of people who don't take these steps, who don't get involved in the recovery process, and they stay in that purgatory of sobriety, you know, never really getting better. When what's available is just absolutely amazing. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Every promise in this book, and there's maybe 200 of them, always materializes if we work for them. But that's the key. We need to work for them. you know, I believe God's got a job to do and we've got a job to do. We need to participate in the recovery process. We need to do some work. We're not going to be saved by faith alone as an alcoholic. Faith without works is dead. The early AAs found that out. So what we need to do is we need to participate. There's a great line in the 12 and 12. I think I've shared that here before. It says, God is not going to render us white as snow without our cooperation. So then how shall we cooperate would be the right question to ask. And the answer to that would be to participate in this recovery process. All right, this thought brings us to step 10. Step 10 suggests we continue to take personal inventory. Step 4. We continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. That would be step 9. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So as we are going through our amends, we are supposed to be involved in step 10. We have entered the world of the Spirit. What does that mean to you? Remember, spiritual terms in this book, what we're directed to do is ask ourselves, what do these spiritual terms mean to us, coming from our experience? And I believe the world of the Spirit, and this is just for me, and I hold on to the right to change my opinion at any time because hopefully I'm growing in understanding and effectiveness. And I might have a completely different idea about this, but I believe the world of the Spirit is one where we are aware of the consciousness of the presence of God, where we basically seek direction from God, and that intuition becomes working knowledge. Intuition is to know without conscious thought. That intuition becomes a God sense. And a lot of times we are guided and we are directed. And this is really the world of the Spirit. The world of self we know really well. You know, going back and forth to the liquor store, back and forth to the cop man, back and forth to the bar. We know what that is like. The world of the Spirit is a whole different animal. You know, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Remember, those are basically four-step things. We've seen those as character defects. And this is asking us to continue to watch. Now, there's certain spiritual exercises that I like to do myself. I like to task myself with certain exercises. And there was a period of time where every single day I made it my main obligation to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. To watch for these things. To see them in my behavior and my attitude. And when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That's a prayer directive. So as we go through the day, we're watching for our character defects to raise their ugly head. And then when they do, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Immediately, we talk to somebody immediately. A lot of times, it's good for us to have some phone numbers of some people that are in the fellowship of the Spirit with us. What I mean by that is people who have step experience, who are going through the steps, or have been through the steps. You want a couple of phone numbers on your speed dial that are for your immediately's. If you need to talk about something to somebody, maybe you can't get your sponsor. You know, you need to talk to somebody. So you might have a couple of buddies that you've made arrangements that, you know, you're going to be each other's immediately. You know, if I call you up, answer the phone, I might need to talk to you about something. And we need to make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Why do we need to make amends quickly? I'll tell you from my own personal experience. The longer I'm sober, and the longer I'm in this place called recovered, the weaker I get for my tolerance for doing things wrong. My first year in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was still robbing, raping, and pillaging. I was still all over the place, just acting out, okay? And it was like, it was like that's the way it was. Today, if I lie to somebody today, if I do something wrong, or if I'm dishonest, or I'm going around somebody, or I'm being selfish, it just comes right up in my face. I'm very sensitive to this now. Where, like, in my first year, it was, it was par for the course. Now I'm trying to live a different life. So I'm very, very sensitive to these things. So when I do something wrong, if I don't make amends quickly, it just erodes my emotional condition. It erodes my spirit. And I've learned that that's not good. That's not good for me. It's not good for my effectiveness for others. It places me closer to a drink rather than further away from it. And I need to stay current on these things. So step 10 really is a way of staying current. Step 10 is a reactive step. It's an as you move through the day step. It's basically laying out the tools from steps 1 through 9 and 10 and 11. And it's telling you that in a reactive way, you pick up these tools and you use them. Because this is the way we need to live. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Step 10 is telling us we need to use these tools that we've learned. And we need to live it in a day-to-day basis. So that we can stay comfortable emotionally and spiritually, so that we clean up the past, so that we're not carrying around a bunch of garbage with us. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help, and that's step 12. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Now here are some step 10 promises. These are really amazing promises. You do not Very rarely does this discussion meeting use as a topic the 10 step promises, because they're controversial. Why are they controversial? They're controversial because there's not a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who really have experience with the first 9 steps, the first 10 steps. They haven't really taken them. So they don't have experience with these promises. These promises haven't materialized. So if you use this topic in a discussion meeting, a lot of people will have, they'll flip out about it. Because it's basically saying your problems with alcohol is over, okay? And, a lot of people don't want to hear that. They want to think that we don't drink a day at a time. And, the longer I'm away from a drink, the closer I am to my next one. And, all this other stuff that you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that goes contrary to the promises and to the directions in this book. But let's look at these promises and let's, for a minute, assume that they could possibly come true if we did the work in the first 10 steps. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. How about that? You've ceased fighting anything or anyone. That's an amazing promise right there. I don't know about anybody else in here, but for the longest time, I had fights going on. I had fights going on at work. I had fights going on with neighbors. I had fights going on with the garage mechanic. I had fights going on with family members. I had fights going on. I was always in collision with other people. There was turbulence in my life on all kinds of levels. And you did not get in my face because I would freak out. And in the 10th step, it's basically saying we don't fight anymore. That doesn't mean that we don't stand up for principles we believe in. It just means that we don't fight. We don't engage in that unhealthy emotional activity called fighting. For by this time, sanity will have returned. This is the first place in the book where it says that sanity has returned. In the second step, it says, we will regain sanity. But in step 10, it says it has returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. I used to hear all the time in the 90s, in the AA groups I was going to, you'd hear somebody with 15 years say, I went to a wedding the other day and there was alcohol all over the place and I had to get the hell out of there. And I'm thinking, wow. What a programless, person that is. I mean, we're not in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't go through these steps to hide. We don't go through these steps to be prisoners and not to be able to live life. These steps offer us freedom. Freedom from the bondage of self. Freedom from that obsession of the mind that causes us to pick back up liquor. I'm around liquor all the time. You know, I am around liquor all the time. We, you know, where we go out to eat, you know, if we go to a party, if there's family affairs, there's always wine or beer or something. You know, listen, if access to booze was what was going to be my problem and going to cause me to drink, I'd have been drunk a long time ago, because there's always a bar right across the street. You know, it's not the access that's our problem. It's the mind. We react sanely and normally, and we find that this has happened automatically. Reacting sanely and normally to alcohol would be no thanks. You know, I don't want it. And if they keep pressing you and keep pressing you, no, come on, have a drink. You know, I've gone so far as to say sometimes, well, you know, the last time I had a drink, I tried to kill my family. You know, and listen, I don't like you anywhere near as much as I like my family. You still want me to have that drink? You gonna pay the bill when the smoke clears? You know, if I take that drink? Okay. I won't bother you anymore. I bet you won't. We'll see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. What does that mean? We've been busting our ass with these steps, haven't we? I mean, we've been running around making amends and doing fist steps and going to meetings. What do you mean no effort on our part? I think what they're talking about here is what we're trying to do is we're trying to work a spiritual program. We're trying to live spiritually. We didn't go head on against the booze. The problem was removed. And that happens with our character defects a lot. You know, trying to be unselfish. If you just try to be unselfish, you'll never get it done. But if you do all of this step work, all of a sudden you'll find that selfishness and self-centeredness has left you. You know, the problems get removed. We don't work on them head on. They get removed. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Use that as a topic for discussion at the next discussion meeting you go to. I'm safe and protected from alcohol. You know, see what happens. Oh, man. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. My alcohol problem's been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So that's the task at hand. We need to keep in fit spiritual condition. We need to participate in spiritual living. We need to take these steps. We need to become disciplined in 10 and 11. We need to work with other alcoholics, and we need to pay attention to the directions in this book. That's what we need to do. If we do that, we'll stay in fit spiritual condition, and we will be able to remain sober. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Okay, what is resting on your laurels? Resting on your laurels is basically expecting yesterday's accomplishments to keep you okay today. Listen, you know, last week's food won't keep you alive this week. It's the same thing with the spiritual life. We can't rest on our laurels. Every single day is a day that we need to be practicing spiritual living. We need to be making an attempt to do the best we can every single week. That's our job. If we do rest on our laurels, we're headed for trouble. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. The daily reprieve that we get is based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So again, it's telling us for the fifth or sixth time here that we need to be diligent about these instructions. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee, thy will, not mine, be done? That's another prayer directive. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. So it just said there that not my will, but thy will be done is something that needs to kind of be part of our thinking. It needs to be with us. It's saying in here constantly. So we need to be remembering that our job is to participate. You know, it's really God's job to provide the conclusions to all this, the results to all this. We need to start letting go of the results and paying more attention to the process. And that's really a great way for your life to get a lot better. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. It told us earlier in this book that willpower is of no avail against alcohol. You cannot will yourself away from the next drink. If you can, you're not alcoholic. They made that very, very clear in this book. It says basically, we hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Well, the alcoholic is the person who cannot use willpower against a drink. It might work 99 times out of 100, but then that hundredth time, you know, you tried to stay away from booze and you couldn't. You ended up at the bar, or you ended up at the liquor store, or you picked up that drink, or you picked up that drug. So we can't use willpower against alcohol directly, but what we can do is we can use our willpower to become disciplined living a spiritual life. Much has already been said about receiving strength and inspiration and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we've become God-conscious. This really is amazing language. It really is. We've become God-conscious. Some people would think that's a very, very arrogant thing to claim. But how can we claim anything else after we've experienced all of the promises from these steps? What else can it be? What else can it be? We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. All right, what is that vital sixth sense? Again, I think it's the realm of intuition. I think it's that sixth sense is what helps us to understand what might be the will of God for us, rather than the will of Chris. The will of Chris was a problem. There was never enough for me to be satisfied of anything. But we must go further, and that means more action. Every single time we're at that point between steps, it urges us on in a way that's urgent. There's a sense of urgency about moving from one step to the other. There was a group up in my area in the early 90s who practiced as a group and as a sponsorship ethic that you go through one step a year. Now, you know, I'm glad that wasn't my home group, you know, and boy, they hated it when I spoke there, I got to tell you. If I went through one step a year, you know, I would have only started working with others in year 12. And I got to tell you, most of my really great experiences working with others were in between year 5 and 10. I mean, that's where most of my really good friends have come from. You know what I mean? I mean, I've got an extraordinary life because of the relationships that were built, you know, in my first 10 years. And I would have been shortchanged on that if I was to do one step a year. So the book doesn't tell us to wait a year. The book says more action. We need more action, you know, immediately, now, next. I mean, these are all words that this book uses. So, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. So what do we need to do? We need to have the proper attitude and we need to work at prayer. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Now, step 11 is broken down into three parts, I believe. When we retire at night, upon awakening, and as we move through the day. Each of those are kind of different disciplines. And, you know, to truly say we work a program, to truly thoroughly follow the path, you know, so we can be one of the rare, you know, one of the people who doesn't fail, I think we need to understand how to do this. Now, the great thing about Step 11 and the great thing about the spiritual process is it's never ending. I mean, you can take this stuff and you can run with it. I can't tell you how many people that I'm friends with who've become Zen masters, and you know, they've gone back to seminary, you know, they're becoming priests. I mean, they really ran with this spiritual stuff. They really ran with the prayer and the meditation. What they're giving us in these exercises is basically prayer and meditation 101. Now, we may have disciplines, because many of us come from vital religious practice. We may have disciplines, but what I would suggest is, if you're an alcoholic, to do this and, you know, as well as, not instead of, you know, to do your regular stuff as well as, not instead of. This is important for us to be able to do this if we're alcoholic, because it's going to, you know, we need to thoroughly follow the path. So let's look at what we do when we retire at night. We constructively review our day. Constructively review our day. Like we're trying to look it over to see, you know, how can we do it better next time? Not beating ourselves up. You know, we are so good at beating ourselves up. I can't believe I said that to the boss. I can't believe it. You know, I mean, we're always, you know, killing ourselves. This is supposed to be a constructive exercise. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? These are four-step stuff. We ask ourselves, do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? These are questions we're supposed to ask at night. What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. That's the one we retire upon at night exercise. Very simple. Just a handful of questions that we need to ask, and then a prayer directive. You know, asking God's forgiveness and then asking to see what corrective measures should be taken. Is there some amends that I need to make? Are there some character defects I need to begin to let go of? Is there a different way to handle some of the relationship stuff that went on today? Because we're trying to get better at this thing called life. We really are. We're trying to live along spiritual lines. Now here's the upon awakening exercise. Upon awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. So you think about what's going to go on today. All right, I got to go into work. You know, I've got a report due. You know, there's a meeting at 3 o'clock with, you know, the sales team. You know, I got to get home. You know, there's my kid's got a basketball game tonight. I have to go. You know, you try to see the whole day. But before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. This is a prayer directive. You need to put this, maybe not these exact words, but you need to put these thoughts into your morning prayers. You ask God to direct your thinking. You ask that your thinking be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. You know, the great thing about prayer is, you know, there's always an answer to a prayer. A lot of times it's not what we expect. A lot of times it's not what we want. A lot of times it's not on our timetable. But there's always an answer to these prayers. For the last 19 years, I've been asking this in my upon awakening. And looking at my life is remarkably different than the way it was 19 years ago. I'm not even the type of person I would have liked 19 years ago. You know what I mean? If I saw somebody like me up there talking, back when I had a year, what horse's ass is this guy? I don't even resemble the type of person that I was in year one. And that's all to the good. It really is. Because I'm more effective. I'm not stumbling around, blind to everything, thinking I know better than everybody. So this stuff works. These prayers work, especially the repetition of them. You change. You can change. The big human dilemma today is so many people can't change. You know how many self-help books are out there? And they're all about, convincing you that you can change for the better. How many people in here actually really benefited from a self-help book? Couple of hands, okay? Couple of hands. I read self-help books till the cows came home, all right? The Joy of Resentment, Winning Friends, and Influencing Others Through Terror, you name the self-help book, Think and Grow Rich, I read every one of those books, and they're all great books, and they all work for, non-alcoholics most of the time. But what would happen is when they tasked me with something, when they said, okay, put the book down now, pull out a piece of paper and write this down, I never would. Or the next time this happens, do this, I never would. I was trying to get better, I was trying to live a better life through intellectually learning how. But it's behavior modification, it's not intellectual. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Indecision is going to be part of our lives. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. Try that next time you're confused and you don't know what to do. Don't just do something. Stand there and ask God for an intuitive thought or decision, and then relax and take it easy. Because it says we don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. So instead of freaking out and bearing down on something like we've done in the past, let's just step back and let's see if we can get that intuitive process going on, which really I believe the intuition is close to the direction I can get from God that there is, that intuitive thought or that intuitive action. I see that working in my life, especially with working with others. For many years, and I still do, I did a lot of wet drunk work. I did a lot of 12-step calls. I did a lot of sponsoring people that were new. And I was not smart enough to handle those situations. And yet, I had done a lot of prayer work beforehand, and all of a sudden I just kind of intuitively knew how to handle those situations with those other alcoholics. Does anybody in here understand what I mean? When you're in there working with somebody, you're not that smart. So there's got to be a power coming from somewhere else that's leading you and guiding you, because you're just not that good. And I felt that. I know what that's like. What used to be a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes the working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is probable that we're not going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. We come to rely upon being inspired by the right thought, the right action. And we continue to ask God for that and for the power to carry out some of these thoughts. And this comes. This is what they talk about in this book. Being aware of the consciousness of the presence of God is something that goes with us. It's an amazing revelation. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We especially ask for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that. It doesn't work. You can easily see why. So this whole paragraph is a prayer directive. It's aiming us toward the right types of prayer. An unselfish prayer. It's not like, oh God, can I have that Hemi Challenger? You know, or oh God, can I get that big promotion? It's more about, can I become more effective helping your children? That's what it's really about. If our circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. This was an Oxford group practice. The whole family prayed together. They did. It's a shame that in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's rarer. It's the exception and not really the rule. When the alcoholic is doing their prayer and meditation in the morning, it's usually a solitary thing. But I'll tell you what, if you have a family that's amenable to it, a wife or a husband or children, give it a try. Do some of this prayer and meditation together in the morning and just see how it works. See how it works out. I know some families that do this, and they rely on it. They absolutely love it. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. Notice that it says also, not instead of, as well as. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. I've been doing that for about 19 years now. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. Those are directives. I read a lot of spiritual books. In the 70s and 80s, I read a lot of science fiction. In my first, 5 years in AA, I read a lot of crazy things. And slowly my library started to shift toward more and more spiritual books. And lately, probably in the last 10 years or so, I've gotten heavily into Christian texts. A lot of real historical work, a lot of critical work, a lot of theology, a lot of church history. I find it fascinating, and I find it comforting, and that's really where I find my comfort in the Christian traditions. But I've also studied Buddhism. Pretty heavily. I've also studied Judaism. I've studied some Muslim stuff. I've studied some Hindu stuff. I've studied some traditional American Indian philosophy and spirituality. And I find a lot of interconnectedness with all of it. I find that a lot of the spiritual masters, were basically saying the same thing. Forgive and love. It's the same type of message. And I find that when my attention is drawn to those texts, on a daily basis as part of my reading, I find comfort in that. I don't know that I'm not necessarily doing this stuff out of a sense of virtue. I'm basically doing this stuff because it makes me feel better. Like everything I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't do any of this stuff to become a better AA member. I did it to not feel like such a scumbag. So again, let's look at where religious people are right. That was a big shift for me because I wasn't a big fan of the religious people that were pointing their finger at me. I wasn't a big fan of that, and I've had a great shift now. Some of my favorite authors, some of the authors that really moved me, are Catholic authors. I mean, if you would have told me that 20 years ago, I wouldn't have believed you. But people like Richard Rohr and Thomas Keating, you know, and they're my favorite guys to read. They've got wonderful spirituality, and it translates into the 21st century in a way that I can understand it, and I can, you know, sometimes even put it into practical application. Sometimes that's the hard part for me. As we go through the day, here's the part. As we go through the day, so we've done when we retire at night, and we've done upon awakening. Now let's look at as we go through the day. I like to tie this part of step 11 into step 10, because remember, step 10 is the reactive step. Step 10 is when it asks us to pull out out of our spiritual kit of tools, the tool that fits each situation as we move through the day. So let's look at this. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. How about we just try this week, folks, as an exercise? How about when we're agitated or when we're doubtful, that we pause and ask God for the right thought or action? Let's just try that and see how it goes. It'll be an interesting experiment. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. We humbly say to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." That's the second time it tells us to do this. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. I don't know about you, but those are things I don't want cropping up in my life all the time. I don't want fear and anger and worry and excitement, self-pity, and especially foolish decisions. I want to avoid those like the plague. And this is basically saying, if we practice this, if we practice these principles, we're gonna be in a better place. We're just gonna be in a more effective place. We're gonna be happier. We're gonna be more productive. We're going to spend less time trying to patch up, explosions that we've caused in our lives. We become much more efficient. These are some of the step 11 promises. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. The same energy we used running around like maniacs, trying to put out fires, that same energy we can use to live a spiritual life, and it'll add to the productivity in our lives. And we're not going to be as tired. I got to tell you, here was me in my first 2 or 3 years of AA. And I'm serious about this. I had to be at work at 8 o'clock. I'd wake up about, 7:15. I'd throw on my clothes, I'd get out in the car, I'd go to work, I'd come home from work about 4:15, and I'd have to take a nap. I was shot. I'd take a nap, and I'd wake up before the AA meeting. I'd wake up, I'd go off to the AA meeting, maybe after the AA meeting I'd go to the diner, eat a hamburger, go home and go to sleep. That's all I could handle. I couldn't handle anything else in my life. You got to see some of my days now. Some of the stuff I put into life. I was up at the Cape Cod Symposium on Addictive Disorders a couple of weeks ago, and I was working from 7 in the morning till like 11 at night. I mean, stressful, doing interviews in front of a camera, heavy duty people, trying to keep everything arranged. There's different people showing up at different times. I've got to go out and glad hand everybody and be Mr. PR and Mr. Sales. I mean, this is stuff I wouldn't have been able to handle 5 minutes of, back in the early 90s. And it was not that difficult. What can you pack into the stream of life? What happens when you start to get heavily involved in this recovery stuff is you start to wish that there was a 48-hour day. You really do, because there's just so much good stuff you'd like to do. The day is just not long enough. Back when I was drinking, I couldn't wait to pass out. I just wanted out. You know what I mean? Give me the 100-proof stuff, because I want to go downtown now. And I just wanted out. You know, today I want longer days. I mean, there's just some amazing stuff going on in my life. I can't even, if I told you just today what was going on in my life and who, you know, who I was networking with and what was going on, I could spend 2 hours telling you what was going on in my day-to-day, my, you know, in my life today. And, it's amazing stuff. And, you know, I can't take credit for this. The only thing I can say that really caused this in my own life was my adherence to some of these principles. You know, my effort at living life along spiritual lines. And again, I did not do that to be virtuous. I did it to get out of the jackpot. And the great thing about the recovery process from alcoholism is, look at it like this. Alcoholism is a chronically progressive fatal disease. Right? Any scientist worth their weight in salt today is saying, yes, this is a disease. It's chronic, it's progressive, and it's fatal. The recovery process from this particular illness brings about a way of life that's absolutely remarkable. You know, a new freedom and a new happiness. Now, you know, to recover from cholera, you know, to go into and take like a do a recovery process from cholera, you don't get a new freedom and a new happiness. You don't wish to regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. I mean, you don't get all these promises. You don't from those other treatments for diseases. The bad news is alcoholism has an unorthodox treatment method. It's in the 12 steps. It's unorthodox. The good news is the 12 steps bring you to a way of life that's truly remarkable and truly amazing and truly wonderful to live. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we've just outlined in step 11. That's how we discipline ourselves. We discipline ourselves by doing what it's asking us to do in step 11. For anybody that hasn't done step 11, you know, upon awakening, when you retire at night and as you move through the day, for anybody that's not done that, I so highly recommend you just saying, okay, I'm going to try it that way for a week just to see what happens in my life. I want to see how this stuff really does work. And I would challenge anybody in here who doesn't do it to just try it for a week and see how it works. I did that 19 years ago. And I would no more leave the house in the morning before my prayer and meditation. I would no more leave the house in the morning than I would walk outside without my pants on. It's just something that I would feel completely unequipped to handle the day without asking God to come in and be part of that day. So give it a try. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Here, we're in between step 11 and 12, and it's telling us again there's more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And, we will talk about step 12. We'll get involved in step 12. We're probably not going to make it all the way through the chapter, but we'll get involved in step 12 next week. Next week will be the last week that I'll be able to do this workshop. We've got some business we need to take care of back up in New Jersey, so we can come down here and really, really land for good. So we're going to go up and we're going to take care of that. And I'm looking forward to next week. Thanks a lot for being here.